Perfect. Okay, I was hoping that we would be small for this one because I want to do a lot of workshopping and I think we can have a lot of participation. So, Megan asked me to cover, my friend Megan asked me to come here and just do something about people who are new to homeschooling if you've never really started, or even if you've been homeschooling for a while. So that's what I'm going to cover today, is start out homeschooling on the right foot by falling fast. My name is Tatiana Fallon, and right now I'm from Louisville, Kentucky, but I was born and raised in Utah. So, Megan, yeah.
If we are not, this is more for brand new
people. Yeah, we're going to go, if you've already been homeschooling for 5 years or more, and you know what you're doing, this isn't necessarily, would get more going somewhere else.
Perfect, thank you.
So
I just was attracted to the failing part.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
I'm going to speak. Yes. Okay, so I'm assuming everyone's been homeschooling for less than 5 years here. Perfect. That's what I was kind of hoping for. Okay, so these are the three things we're going to cover today, which is how does a child learn, know yourself and your child, and then clearly define your role, okay? So I've been homeschooling. My oldest is 12. She just turned 12, and we started homeschooling when she was in kindergarten. I was homeschooled. I'm the second oldest of six, and we were homeschooled in the 90s. And so I've been doing this for a while, and I've made a lot of mistakes, and I've realized that if I had known these three things, I think I would have saved thousands of dollars on curriculum. So, and I would have not been so lost all the time. So the first thing is, these are my kids. This is not what they look like now. These are my two daughters. So we were living in Bountiful, Utah. And is anyone here from Utah? Okay. Y'all are so lucky. In Bountiful, where we live, it's extremely competitive to just have your kids do everything and, like, be the awesomest, best possible things on the planet. So, like, I'm a young mom, and I have these two little girls, and we're in the neighborhood, and everybody's like, well, is she reading yet? And I was like, what do you mean, is she reading yet? She's like, if your child's not reading before kindergarten, they're going to fall behind, and you can't, like, da-da-da. And I'm like, wait, so all y'all who are going to this school here, everybody here is going to be reading before they get there, so I need to get my four-year-old reading? What's the point of school if I don't understand? And so anyways, I was really stressed out, so I'm like, if y'all are going to that school and your kids are that much stressed, I don't want to go there. But anyway, so because I was an impressionable young mother who thought I should listen to all the other mothers, which can be helpful sometimes, I decided to start trying to teach my little girl how to read at home so she'd be ready for kindergarten. And as we started to do it, I was like, is this normal? You know when you, like, play games with little kids, like reading games, you're like, at, bat, cat, rat. And I'd be like, bat. And she'd be like, okay, now you do it. You keep going. Make all the words that, like, could rhyme with bat. And I'd be like, bat, ball. No, not bat, ball. Like, at words, at. Say the sound, at. Okay, now let's rhyme with it. Ready, let's try cat. Ready, and you go, dog. No. Like, okay, so, you know, I was just trying to play games with her like this, and for her life, she could not rhyme. Like, I was like, what is this normal? Can kids not rhyme? Maybe kids can't rhyme. Maybe four-year-olds don't rhyme. Little did I realize that is so not true, because my little four-year-old goes around the house rhyming and making rhymes all the time, my four-year-old boy now. So I was like, okay, well, maybe four-year-olds can't rhyme, so it's fine, right? So we keep going. And I start teaching her the alphabet and the sounds, and it didn't matter how I taught it, the dances, anything. She could never say the alphabet all the way through. She could never have, like, what does A say? A. No, what are the sounds A can make? A. No, okay. So, like, nothing we did was working. And I was like, you know what? I think my child might be dyslexic, because I don't think this is normal. So then, I'm dyslexic, and I struggle with reading, so I'm like, it's genetic. So I went to my mom, is like, does Sarah do what I do? It's like, yes, she does. And I'm like, okay, then school's not an option for Sarah, because she is the most tender-hearted, sweetest, nicest, perfect little angel. Like, it's the best child to have. I had a natural birth that was completely painless, and I thought birth was painless. Like, this is just her personality. And I was like, if I send this poor little sweet thing to school where this whole world of people is like, you need to be reading by the time you're five, she's just going to crush her. So I watched my mom homeschool my whole life, and I did not want to do that. And I wasn't going to do that because I was like, you, as a homeschool parent, you're choosing a lot to sacrifice. And so I was like, I'm not going to homeschool my kids, Mom. I love you. But that was a lot, and I saw you do that, and I don't want to do that. I don't want that to be my life. But then Sarah came along, and she was dyslexic. And then Anna came along. And Anna, you know the girls in high school that are like the mean girls? That was Anna from when she was two. She had that, like, and I was like, if you go to high school, you will be the leader of the mean girls. And so I was like, and then she's also dyslexic. So I had these two little dyslexic girls with two very impressionable personalities. And like, thanks God, I guess we have to homeschool because they're not going to go to school, right? So I share this with you because all of us come to homeschooling for once for a specific reason, right? And I think it's really important that we really understand our reasoning. Some people are like, well, I don't want to homeschool as a reaction against public school. And I think that's really important to understand. If you're doing it from the beginning, like we started out as, I don't want you to die there. That's not always the best reason to start because you will burn out. So you need to start out with a very good why. And for my why, it wasn't against public school. It was more like, this is what they need, and I can facilitate that best at home, right? Because I had a full intention of taking them to school. I wasn't against that, but I'm realizing I could meet their needs better. So understanding their why is really, really important. But then you have to go to the next question is, what do I believe is education? Because how you answer this question will determine all the curriculum you buy, the co-ops you join, the people you gather around you, because there's a lot of debate about this. And we would wish that it was actually like set in stone answer, but there isn't. And I've studied a ton of educational pedagogy and a ton of other things, and this is how I've narrowed it down, okay? Maybe I'm wrong. There's some better experts in here that can tell me. But there are three camps in educational pedagogy. There's child-led philosophies, there's instructor-led philosophies, and then there's philosophies that try to do both of them simultaneously, okay? So a child-led is going to be where the students play an active role in directing their education. This is important because even though, like, you see some programs where there's a lot of child initiative, I wouldn't consider it to be child-led unless the child is literally making the decisions what's happening in their home, okay? So when I'll show you some examples, okay? But it's really important that they are actively directing their education based on their interests, curiosity, and their pace, okay? Instructor-led is emphasizing the teacher's role as primary source of knowledge and authority. And these approaches often focus on structured curriculum, directed instruction, and discipline. And this is, the importance is, it's very much so the teacher is planning everything, right? And that, to put it in that camp, that has to be how it works, okay? But, and then there's a combination of both, where you seek to find balance between student and teacher, okay? So if you're looking at student-led, if you're thinking like, you know what, I really believe, does everyone understand this? Can we go a little bit deeper with this? Okay, so student-led comes from the philosophy of a man by the name of Rousseau. Has anyone ever heard of Rousseau? He was a French philosopher, scummy, horrible dude, but he was really, really popular in the French Enlightenment, which had huge influence in America, and so Rousseau's his thinking really influenced us, okay? He came out with a book called On Education, and the story is about this young child named Emile, and Emile creates this beautiful, amazing life all on his own, and the only thing that corrupts him is the state and his parents. And so Rousseau came from the belief that We come to this world as perfect beings, and as perfect beings, if we can maintain our inner, like, truth, we'll maintain that. And it's society that corrupts us. So when you are kind of going from a student-led way, you are assuming that your child comes to you perfect. Okay? And it's important to make this distinction, because in teacher-led, it's way more the Puritan model, which the Puritan model is all of us are condemned by Adam's fall, right? Adam fell, and so because of that, every human being is a flawed, evil human being, and the only way to perfect ourselves is to strive to be better. And so you have to have authority in your life who helps you find that better way. So that would be what you see teacher-led. That's the viewpoint, okay? I don't agree with either of those viewpoints. My core faith teaches that we are infinitely perfectible. We come with grit, with inside of us, with a soul that is divine and therefore good, but we also come with our body, which is corruptible. And so I believe kind of both. So based off of that, if you believe in student-led, these are the things that you would be drawn towards. So, and we're going to talk about how this helps in picking curriculum or picking paths and picking, you know, schools. So, like, Montessori schools are super structured to give the child the environment required and necessary to thrive independently from the teacher. They're phenomenal. I've toured several of them. I've had several of my friends who are part of it. It's so amazing to watch the little teeny kids walk in and they make themselves food and they clean up after everything and they have little zones where they do all their learning and they teach and they learn together. They're phenomenal schools, and I really love what she has to. She's also French. Montessori put together. It's a really, really cool. Unschooling has become more of a popular idea, and a lot of homeschoolers choose to unschool. To be a true unschooler, though, you really do have to be in the camp of child-led completely. I've seen some people who kind of do a hybrid, where it's a little bit of both, but this is where it falls in. These are some other, as I was doing some research, project-based learning falls within the student-led. I would put it in kind of both, but if you really just like, here, do this thing, like Louis L'Amour is a great example of project learning and how he got his education and really was all on his own. Waldorf educations, there's a whole curriculum from Waldorf you can buy that kind of support this. But the idea of self-led or student-led is self-education is the only possible education. The rest is mere veneer laid on the surface of a child's nature. I thought that was really interesting that Charlotte Mason said that. I would put Charlotte Mason more in both camp, but I really think she's really right. You know, the only way, like, I'm not memorizing math facts for my 4-year-old. You know, he's memorizing. So how do I make him memorize it or make his brain memorize it? I can't. So he has to learn that, right? So that's literally the only way it happens. And the next one is teacher-led. So the areas that are teacher-led you'd see is traditional education, the classical education, if you're familiar with classical education, like the trivium, grammar, rhetoric, and logic. I don't know if really classical education, you don't have CCs here in, you do? You have CC here?
Two.
You have two? Okay, so yeah. Yeah, so if you're more in that camp, and again, this is why I think it's important that you do the research, because I don't think either one is the right for everyone. Does that make sense? Like, if they're going to work, and they have worked, right? So if that's what you operate on, then that's the path you need to go on, and that's what you should do, right? So that's why I'm saying that they're good and they work, but you have to believe this first to be able to run it effectively in your home, okay? So, I'm not the biggest fan of Skinner. There's other reasons for that, but mostly because he was twisted in his science. But But he did do a lot of research in behavioral science, and it's fascinating the things that he has come up with, and his research is really interesting. A classical education builds the habits of the mind that lead to the intellectual and personal independence. And this is Susan Wise Bauer, The Well-Trained Mind. She's amazing. So if you're like, I'm a classical all the way, I want to do this for my kids, then that's your resource. She's phenomenal. I love everything she has to say. And the ideal of education is to reshape students' behavior in ways that are culturally and societally acceptable, using reinforcement to guide learning in a structured environment. Now, I'm going to go to the next one, and then we'll go back. Okay, this is how I would say these do both, in my opinion. Where's Charlotte Mason? Okay, put Charlotte Mason on that slide. I don't know why I didn't put that on that, but you can research all these, but I would say well-educated heart and leadership education really do both, because while they do put a lot of emphasis in the child direction, the parent is very active in directing and working with them. So it's both. And then I also put on, this one's interesting, problem-based learning. It's kind of like project-based learning, but you start with a problem and then develop your project from the problem. I've been doing some research on that. It's really fun. Experiential learning with reflection is kind of like, all right, we're going to go to the factory and do a tour. And then afterwards, the reason it's both is because then the instructor walks them through the process they learned, right? Instead of just like, go on a field trip, it has to have both elements to it. Okay, so I'm going to tell you a secret. The philosophy you lend to is extremely dependent on your personality. And I'm going to say that because as I've been doing research, I'm realizing, oh, the people who love CC, this is the type of people you are. And the people who love leadership, this is the type of people you are. Because at the end of the day, nobody's educating your child but you. And if you have to spend all day long fighting your personality, you're going to be miserable, and your child's going to be miserable, and your home's going to be miserable, and you're going to quit. So you can look at all the different types of educational philosophies that are out there, but then we're going to do this next, okay? And I'm going to show you through my personality, and then hopefully one of you, if you have taken some personality tests, will be willing to do it for us all to see, okay? So, personality matters. My mom is a therapist, and oh my gosh, we get so much of this. But she's really a stickler about personality tests, and ones she thinks are, a lot of them are useless, in her opinion. These are the three that she agrees with the most. Personality Plus, it's a temperament one. It's not really your personality, it's your temperament. And the color code also kind of goes with that. But it's not really your personality. And I think that's important for you to know. I put it up there because your temperament does matter, but personality. The two that I would do is Briggs-Meyer type. That's the extroversion, introversion. And this is based off of, what is his name? Oh, gosh. Jung. It's Jungian philosophy. Very well researched, very well backed. This to me is kind of the best one out there. Coupled with the Big Five personality, those ones is also very well researched, and most scientific institutions only use this, and most therapists only use this. So any other out there, I would just be like, don't worry about them and don't waste time with them. Well, the Enneagram is interesting, and I do like it. It's like ancient Hinduism, and it's been thousands of years old, and I think there's a lot of truth to it, but it's harder to study. You really have to study it to understand it. So I didn't put up there, but it is helpful. So we're gonna exit this, and we're gonna go here. Okay, all right. This is my personality type for the 60, the ENFP. They added aggressive or turbulent on the. So there's an extra one. This is a free website. You can take this and get your test for free. So I am highly introverted, which is so funny because if on this test, I scored higher in extroversion. So I don't know. But his one I was like highly introvert, very intuitive, high feeler, in the middle here, and then assertive. I guess I'm assertive. I don't know a lot of that about that personal one, but okay, this is interesting. So they've called me, what is my name? I'm the mediator. I would say that's probably true. Yes. Everybody call in the family, they call me for problems. My husband has a joke, he's like, so how are you everybody's unpaid therapist? I'm like, I don't know. They just call me and I just listen and I say, okay, you'll figure it out, I love you. Maybe I should start being mean. Okay. All right, so as an ENFP, you're rich, you possess a rich inner world brimming with imagination, empathy, and idealism. You think that would describe me, Megan? Yeah. Pretty accurate. So, okay, now that I know this is who I am, and then I take this other test, I want to show you what I did, okay? I went into ChatGPT. Oh gosh, how's it going? Not moving. For those of you who were in my AI class last. Okay. I started out with saying, are you familiar with the 16 personality tests? And he's like, yeah, I know what that is. I'm an INFP, and I'm wondering, based on our discussion about models of homeschooling like child-led or teacher-led, what would my personality best fit? So it went through in here, and he was like, your personality is characterized by being idealistic, empathetic, creative, and adaptable. These traits can influence how you naturally approach homeschooling, and the models might suit your personality. Here, in INFP, traits might align with different approaches. So now it takes me through child-led, why I might like this, teacher-led, why this might fit, but it's so interesting at the bottom, it says, for INFPs in homeschooling, focus on meaningful learning. This is so true for me. Like, it even gave me a schedule. Let me show you the schedule it created for me. And it's so funny because I was like, that's actually my homeschool schedule. I don't know, it's kind of creepy. Okay, so right here, it's like weekly rhythm, Monday, project-based learning, nature study. Every Monday, we go on a hike. I'm like, how do you know this? I never even told you this. Or we do, like, we have art classes. Tuesday, co-op activities. We don't do that Tuesday. We do that Thursday. Wednesday, focus on subjects in a relaxed way, like reading and math and writing. Yes, it's very much so. My home has to be, like, kind of slow. I never have, like, 10 o'clock, we're doing math. 11 o'clock, we're doing this. Like, it would crush me to do that. And then Friday is free exploration day. Every Friday is a free day for me to just dream up ways I'm going to do things with the kids. We always do things. We're always going out and doing things. So he says, this is interesting. Your high agreeableness and openness makes you a warm, creative, and nurturing homeschooling parent. And I'd be like, yeah, that would be pretty realistic about how my homeschooling feels. But see, the thing, but this is my personality, right? And it's taken me so many years to be okay with the fact that I can't do 5 days of math and reading lessons. I can't. I have tried so hard to do that. And I burn out so fast, and I quit, and I walk away, and I freak out. So now I know I do 3 days of reading and math lessons every single week, and then 2 days of Friday's a free day, and that's the day we play, and we do tons of fun things, and Thursday's a co-op day. So I know I prep 3 days. That means those 3 days have to be really good, but I also, like, I know I can't do that. I can't push myself that way. And it took me years to figure that out. So the other thing I thought was super interesting, it says, how to structure homeschooling based on these traits, focus on relationships. This is also very important to me. I spend a lot of time talking to my kids one-on-one, talking to them about their dreams, because that's important to me. That's my what I like. So this is so interesting. It's like reading, journaling, more family discussions, hands-on projects, nature walks, group activities, independent explorations of interest. This is literally my schedule. In the morning, we spend 2 hours doing our hard, really that I structured things that they need, and then we do hands-on projects, we do our science and history, math, we do all those things, and then at two o'clock I'm done. We have no technology until like 7, and the kids just have to be independent and figure out what they're gonna do. I'm like, how does it know me, and how I like it's this is taking me like how to do this and not be miserable with myself homeschooling, and I could have just done this while it wasn't around. Anyways, yeah.
At what point do you say, well, what is the personality type of my children or my individual children?
Oh, yes. I'm going to get there next. Yes, I am. Because that's the second part of this. It does. It literally changes everything. Yes. Okay, so anyone taking this test, the 16 personalities, and know what they are? Oh, man, nobody's taking it?
I've taken it.
You have? Okay, do you want to... Would you be willing to share with us?
Well, I know that I've... So if I could see them, I could probably...
Okay, let me go back to it and you can see them.
Or I could see the light.
Okay, so they are extroverted, introverted.
So I'm introverted.
So you're an I.
Yep.
They're intuitive or... intuitive or... It's not... Oh.
Feeling. No.
No. I. S. Sensor.
Intuitive.
Observant. Intuitive. So you're an I N. Are you a
T?
Are you a judging or perceiving?
Perceiving.
So I N T P. Okay, we're probably pretty similar because you're just a T and I'm an F. Well, let's see what happens. Okay. So, gosh.
Okay. What's the question?
Is there, my friend.
Are you on?
Oh, yeah, is INTP. How would you recommend she... Oh, sorry. Wait, recommend. Yeah, that's all right, whatever. Her... No, structure. What do you mean? She...
So, your schedule that you read earlier, that was...
Yeah, but that's exactly what I do.
Yeah.
And I've never told it that. So. Okay.
How would you structure the homeschooling?
Yeah, so this is what it says. So for an INTP, their natural... Okay, tell me if this fits you, okay? Their natural strengths of curiosity, love, learning, analytical thinking, and adaptability will be heavily influenced on how they structure their homeschooling approach. INTPs are often driven by a desire to understand why things work. Okay. They and work the way they do, and they value independence and flexibility. Okay? All right. Here's a breaking down of how these traits might guide their homeschooling style and structure. So, curious and analytical thinkers, they love exploring ideas, solving problems, engaging in abstract concepts. Adaptability and flexibility, they may not enjoy rigid schedules. Okay. All right, homeschooling models, child-led. It says why it fits, how to make it work, but then he's also, you could do, okay, it doesn't even give you student, it doesn't even give you, you should not choose teacher-led. Because it's saying your personality wouldn't like it, but I don't know.
Because naturally, a characteristic of myself is I am a teacher.
You are a teacher. That's what,
so,
yeah.
So, like, I am a teacher in my own as a strength. So,
well, it says to do a hybrid because a hybrid approach allows you to have enough structure to meet essential goals while leaving room for exploration. Do you think that would be true?
Yeah.
To probably do more of a hybrid. How to make it work. Use minimal curriculum. Do you feel like this is true?
I want to make the curriculum work.
Yeah, yeah. Or a checklist of chore subjects, but let children explore other subjects freely. Plan themed weeks or units. Studies that allow creative exploration and in-depth learning. Project-based and exploration-driven learning. So this is what it's saying you should do this.
Which is interesting because, so her device has never heard me. So as I've been processing how my first year went, and I tried a bunch of kind of different things, it's kind of where I've landed. What am I passionate about? What am I willing to do? Because if I'm not going to do it, we're not going to do it. Right? And then schedule. I am like, I hate a schedule. I hate the 9 to 5. I love to, like, get in, get work done, get out, move on. Like, if I was to describe my work habit. And so that's really fascinating.
Yeah.
That's really helpful just to give, like, us a start, like,
so what you can do if you have ChatGPT, and I have been doing this, is you can start workshopping with it and saying, okay, so understanding this about myself, I need to do science, okay, with my, and then tell them how old your child is, and then brainstorm with it, and then come up with, like, okay. And the cool thing is, I just did this for my daughter because she was really struggling with her math and her reading. It gave me all these resources on the internet that I could use. And then it showed me all these different things I could look into that might work with her. And so together we created her whole educational plan this semester in one day. And it's tailored to her and what I can do, right? So, but you the thing about using AI is you have to know how to use it, right? And so, like, at the beginning you'll see I prompted it by saying, are you familiar with this? And you have to kind of direct it. You can't just be like, how should I homeschool? Like, it can't answer that. You really need to direct it in, like, are you familiar with this personality types? Are you familiar with the different theories of education? Okay, now knowing those two things, and this is my personality. See how I created, like, a structure and flow for it to work with it? So it's not this genie in a bottle, you can just answer all your questions. You have to work with it. But my hope is that today is that I can show you how using this tool and I can create it. The next thing you could do is, like, okay, so based off of this, what would you recommend? How old are your children?
Five.
For a math program. What is wrong? How come I for my 5-year-old? My friend's 5-year-old, because I got to make sure it's talking about you. I got to say, sometimes if you put numbers, it doesn't like them. 5-year-old. It's getting better with them, but. Look at that. It just told you to do Right Start Math, Matthew C., Beast Academy, Singapore Math. And then it's listing you the reasons why it would fit with your personality and why it would work with you. So I'm just trying to tell you, like, if you can use this, you're going to save thousands. Like,
well, and thousands of hours trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
I know.
When I figured this out, I was like, what? Yeah, exactly. And then, yeah. So he says, why these are recommendations, explorer-friendly, conceptually very deep, open-ended options. These are going to work with your personality, right? And this is why it's super key, is because for years I always tried to, like, find the person who homeschools perfectly and then homeschool like them. And I was like, how come it's not working? How come your kids are happy and my kids are, like, miserable and I'm miserable? What am I doing wrong? You homeschool perfectly. And then I got to know myself because I got older and more mature. I began to realize, duh, it's because I can't homeschool your kids the way you do it because I'm not you, and I'll never be you. I had this epiphany because my best friend, when we moved to Kentucky, she has 7 children, and all of her children are brilliant, and her house is just so well run, and she's just this such a cool person. She's like my favorite person. And I was like, okay, I can do it. I can be Rachel, and I can homeschool like Rachel. And so I was like, tell me everything you do. How do you do this? And then, like, one week of that, I was like, I cannot be Rachel. That is not me. I will never be Rachel. And then I learned to just love my friend Rachel and just love what she's doing. And be like, Rachel does Rachel, and I do Tati. And I'm never going to do Rachel because I literally can't. And so then I gave myself a lot more permission and freedom to start thriving and building my structure, my home, the way I could do it, because Rachel's not homeschooling my kids and never will. So I have to make this work if it's going to work. So so now you know, if we go back, here's some things. He's like, real-life math applications, schedule a cooking together with your 5-year-old. just start cooking together with your five-year-old, because, you know, like, the other things like this, math apps, Dragon Box, don't know what that is. I think it's just fun just so you can just, like, play card games like War for math. Like, it'll just keep giving you suggestions and ideas. These are the curriculums it recommends. Look, it only gave you five. You only have to look at five. And then pick from there, and it tells you what, why it fits and what it's best for. This is crazy. Okay, so then you said, what about your kids? Okay. This is a hard thing because children psychology, children don't develop, you don't develop your personality fully until you're adult. So for you to be like, oh, my child's an extrovert, I would say that when my child was two, Sarah was an extrovert. She talked to everybody. She was bubbly and fun. Now she can't even make a phone call without a panic attack. She never talks in public. So when she was two, I would have said, oh, she's extrovert. We need to get her out in public and do all these things. But she prefers to be hiking and playing in the rivers with her. She'll do it with a friend, but she doesn't need to do it with a friend, right? And I would have said Anna was an introvert when she was little, but now Anna's like, Mom, I want to go to middle school because I need friends. And so, like, you know, they're not fully baked. So for you to come in and be like, my child's this, this, and this, and this, and stereotype them, you are not doing them a favor. Because the brain is so plastic, but we mold it, right? So if you come in, one of the things that was really hard for me, when we moved to Kentucky, I homeschooled, it was during COVID, so I homeschooled my niece and my nephew. And my niece is a unique person, and she is hard. That's just what she is. But her family had labeled her as crazy. So everyone just called, oh, she's crazy. Hannah's crazy. Hannah's crazy. And I finally was like, I came to my sister one day. I was so upset. I was like, listen, do you want a crazy 21-year-old? Because you're making one. And she's like, no, I'm not. I'm not making two. Hannah's just crazy. We love her. She's like six, and she's just crazy. I'm like, you are creating a script in her mind that she is crazy. And then that will translate into whatever crazy means. You think crazy's fun right now, but crazy at 21 is not fun. And so she's like, oh, maybe you're right. And I'm like, yeah, please stop calling her crazy. She's high energy. High energy at 21 is great. She's creative. Creative at 21 is beautiful. She's adventurous. I have lost her five times in public. So but they were all in public places that had like a funnel to one out, so I could find her. Yeah. I haven't lost any of my children, but I have lost her. So, but I, you know, it's really important that we don't say, oh, my child is this right now. It's really important that we allow them to try on the hat of being an extrovert and try on the hat of all these things. However, as your child ages, especially as they start to hit puberty, and especially when they get to be about 14 and 15, that personality does start to cement, okay? And so you could have your teenagers take this test, but I don't know if it's, but you could have them take this test, and it would be very reliable. But just make sure when you take this test with them, you're very clear with them that this is what you are now, and as you continue to mature and grow, it will change, and that's okay. And even, like, life events can alter our personality as well. So we might have, like, when I was, when I was in college, I took this test, and I was an S. I was not an N. And then life events really changed. A lot of my personality changed, and now I'm way more N. So it's not something that's fixed. And so you can definitely change and do things. But that's why I would caution you of putting your kids in a personality box, but at the same time, it's very helpful for you to know their strengths and weaknesses, okay? And those aren't necessarily, and then a lot of those have to do with the hormone makeup of your child. So if your child is a girl, hormonally, they create more estrogen, and estrogen is the bonding hormone, and it's also... It's the one that allows us to work together. So girls will be a more amenable by nature because they have more estrogen. And your boys have more testosterone, which is more of the aggressive, obviously, but it's also that explorer and that fearless idea thing. So by their hormonal makeup, they will be different. And recognizing that is really important because I thought I was a perfect parent, and then I had two boys, and I realized I was never a perfect parent. I was just a parent of two girls. And I stopped judging everybody else, because I was like, I'm so sorry. I thought I was so good. And, yeah.
Is there an age recommendation that you would suggest for the 16 personalities test, like, not under this age? Or
I would say, like, so in the chemical development of the brain, I'm going to butcher this, but at 12, the hippocampus starts growing exponentially faster, which is the frontal lobe part of your brain. And that's where your personality resides. And that's also so the identity of self starts happening. So that's why you see, like, the Jewish tradition has the bar mitzvahs. In the LDS faith, they move on and, you know, gain in the priesthood or other things. That's why that happens at 12, because that's when that part of the brain starts to grow a lot more. So I think it'd be a really good activity to do between, like, you know, as you start to see that at 12 happen, but just make sure you are pairing it with, this isn't necessarily half, like, you will change and explore, and then that's healthy and good, right? Because you never want it to be an excuse of, like, oh, Mom, I'm not going to the party today, I'm an introvert. And it's like, well, let's try this. Let's try playing with friends, and let's see what happens. And then after we try it, maybe we can. Maybe you are an introvert, but let's try this, okay? So that's what I would just caution. And then also interesting fact that happens at 12 as the hippocampus grows and develops, they start to sever themselves from parental units and develop a sense of self. And so that bite back that you get is there trying to navigate, because prior to 12 in your development of self, you actually can't see yourself as a human. You see yourself as an extension of a parent. And that's why childhood trauma is so debilitating, is because if a parent was abusive, you are abusive. Does that make sense? Like, there's no differentiation between my father was an abusive person and I was not, I'm not him, right? Yeah. You're not able to separate the abuse from the person doing the abuse, right? And it's actually part of the development in your brain. So when it comes to your kids, when they get that age and they start fighting you, that's really healthy. And you just have to teach them the tools to appropriately disagree with you. And so, like, right now I'm dealing with a lot of sass and a lot of kickback from my 12-year-old, and I'll be like, wow, Sarah, it sounds like you want autonomy. So how can we learn to talk to each other so that you can respect the boundaries we have in our home, but I can respect your desire to be you, yeah. Right? And so, because you don't want them to, like, enmesh with you. You want them to be a healthy person, but you're the parent still, right? So, going back to that, understanding that you're homeschooling your girls is going to be different than homeschooling your boys, picking curriculum for the child is also, I feel like, really important. And inside of that, like, so, let's see, let me go back to this. Okay. I thought this was a cool quote. Knowing yourself is the beginning of all wisdom. How much time do I have left? Oh, I don't have a lot left. Okay. Okay. So this is a picture of my boys, and this is my girls. With my girls, I had to do reading completely different because they're both dyslexic, like I mentioned earlier. And so it has been a journey trying to figure out how to get them to be able to read, because I couldn't just get a phonetic program and then do it. And everyone says, well, how about you do all about reading? It's really good for dyslexic people. But then I'm like, but my personality is such that I can't do that because I can't do the structure. So, like, we got to the point now where we're doing pretty good. Anna is an independent reader and Sarah's almost an independent reader. And we found that structure. But then along come my boys. And it didn't matter what I wanted to do with them. They weren't going to do anything with me. So, like, I had all the books and all the things and everything, and every day we'd sit down, and, like, I have these two-hour time where we do math and reading, and then the rest of it is fun. Like, I'm a fun mom, but you have to do these 2 hours. Like, these 2 hours have to happen. Like, you have to have the structure. Uh-oh. What did I do? No, it just died. Okay. So, maybe I have to put it like that, and then it won't die. So I spent a lot of time on my knees trying to figure out what to do with, this is my oldest son, because I feel like, if you look at the personality test, oh yeah, I'll show you this. On the big five, this is the worst thing I hate about myself. I am 92% agreeable. I cannot say no. If I say a no, it is the most painful part of me. One thing I love about myself is I am 89% openness, which is funny because everybody's like, how come you love every weird, broken child? And I was like, because, like, they're just so cool. And everyone's like, they're annoying. And I'm like, no, but, like, if you look at them like this, this is super cool about them. And I'm like, okay, no. Like, but I think that's a huge part of my ability to, like, love people and be that is just I'm just open. I'm just like, oh, wow, you're like, sitting on the chair upside down. What is that doing to your body? Like, you know, like, to me, I don't see that as, like, a disciplinary problem because I'm like, huh, wonder what's needing to happen right there, right? Like, and it's, like, the women in my Commonwealth get really annoyed because when I'm teaching, I, like, tolerate everything so long as, like, most all the kids are with me. Like, why are you tolerating this behavior? I'm like, oh, because I thought that he just really needed to fill the floor. So it's a weakness. I need to work on that. But anyways, so I'm extremely agreeable, okay? That's the point I'm trying to make. I am extremely agreeable. To be disagreeable, the only 8% of me that is left is excruciatingly painful, okay? This is why I like this test, because it's really important. So along comes my son, who if I'm pretty sure that when he gets to be 20, he's going to be 98% disagreeable. So, but that's not a bad thing, because my brother-in-law is so disagreeable. Like, sometimes I've literally had to tell him, like, John, you're being total a-hole. You need to be nice. But he is so successful. He is so successful in life. He crushes things. He's a wonderful father. He's a wonderful provider. He's a wonderful man, and he's crushing it. He's a surgeon, and he's such a great man. And so I'm so grateful he's disagreeable, because he does so many good things for our families, and he's able to stitch up my children's feet when they chop them with axes. So, like, I'm very grateful for disagreeable people, because I couldn't do that. My agreeableness would be like, I don't want to hurt you more. Like, you know, but he can do that. He can do that. So I don't want to crush my son's disagreeableness, but also I'm so agreeable that if I'm not careful, he will walk all over me. And that's what was happening. It was like he was just walking all over me. And so, like, any kind of curriculums I picked or anything else I picked, I was losing. And then it was a fight. It was a really bad fight. Then I was hating him because he was making me miserable because we were fighting, and then it wasn't working. And so then it was such a mess. So then I brought in my husband and I said, I don't know how to solve this. And he's like, well, I'll solve him. I'll just beat him into the ground. I was like, well, I don't want you to solve it that way. So can we come up with other ways to solve it? And he very, very, very wisely said, why don't we have him be accountable to me? So at the end of the school day, if he hasn't done what he's supposed to do for you willingly and with a proper, we do Nickel and Peck, calm voice and body, then he gets to do school with me, and I won't be nice. And so he's only had to do school with his dad twice so far this year, and he was in tears. Like, okay, all right. Now I'm like, I look at him like, Cole, this is your last and final warning, because after this I'm leaving, and I will not sit here with you and do your math and reading, and if you don't get it done, you will be doing school with dad tonight. And then, boom, he'll sit in his chair, and then he's like, I don't want to school with dad. So, but I had to figure out, I couldn't be the disagreeable person in his life. As much as I wanted to be, and as much as I need to be, like, it was my personality. I can try to change that, but I also like how agreeable I am. People, I like who I am. And I do need to set boundaries, but I don't have to be the only one setting those boundaries. My husband can help me set those boundaries. Other things can. So it's important for you to understand that each one of your children are different, and therefore you will have to navigate this every time. So So hopefully you don't have 10 kids. Then you'll be doing, well, maybe you do. But if you do, like 10 different types of education. So get a ChatGPT membership. Okay. Last thing I really want to cover really quickly are, you wear so many hats as a homeschool parent. These are hats that I've been making out of leather. They're all different types of hats. And they all serve different functions. I didn't know this, but in Louisville, it's Derby, so we're hat people, which we even have milliners. There is a milliner in my city. It is the coolest store to visit. But anyways, hats are a big thing in Louisville. Hats are everywhere. So these hats serve different functions. And I didn't realize that until I started making them, because different people buy different hats for different reasons. So in your home, you wear so many hats. You're the meal cook and planner. You're the housemaid. You're the educator. You have church callings. And these are just four. I'm sure if we were to have more time, we could list like 40, right? And, you know, we all have these different hats. And it's very, very important for you to understand how you do each one of those hats well. So I would go back to ChatGPT and say, I'm struggling getting my house to be clean because I don't like structure. I'm that P personality. It's crushing me. And I would workshop a system that I could do, right? That would work with my personality, right? And do that with, like, you know, church callings. As an introvert, this is what I'm supposed to be doing, but I don't want to talk to anybody. And now I have to go to talk to everybody. I better delegate these talking roles, right? And I work with ChatGPT or just work with a mentor in your life or somebody who can help you figure out, and do that same thing with the different roles. Because if you don't learn to see now as a homeschool parent all the hats that you wear, they're all going to become one meshed hat that burns you out so fast and you become so overwhelmed. And so it's really helpful for me. I actually in my brain think, okay, I'm a person hat. And I need to wear that hat, which not very homeschool moms wear that hat. So every morning I wake up and I go to the gym because I love running. I don't actually love running. I hate running. But I love when I hit 15 minutes and my heartbeat hits 150 for 15 minutes. I love that feeling, and I love how I function for the day. So I wear that hat first thing in the morning, because if I don't wear that hat, I don't do well with my other hats, right? And so I've recognized that, and I've created a system to support me in that. And then the other hat, you know, then my hat is I'm a homeschool mom. I'm present with my kids. I do these things. This is what I'm doing. But then I'm also community leader hat. When does that fall in my week? I'm also a spouse hat. When does that fall in my week? How do I structure that? And it's a journey, but it's a journey that only homeschool parents have to take, because other people, I mean, everyone has to learn this, but we get to learn this with like a mammoth truckload of rocks on top of us while we're learning it. That's what I feel like. It feels like to homeschool, and then you still have to function as a human and do well, and then everything else. So this is one way I've thought is really helpful to do that. So yeah, you can't do all the roles at once. I've tried that a couple times. So plan your week to fill each role in its proper time so you can learn to be present. Okay, the next thing, I don't know if Idaho has any state requirements, and y'all are for Idaho, right? So this isn't something you really need. But we're in the East, man. There's so many requirements. I have a friend who homeschools in New York, and she has a state representative in her home every 3 months. Reviewing her curriculum. Yeah. Okay, anyways, so these are things, though, I highly recommend. Do not homeschool alone. Even if you just have a 5-year-old or you just have a little kid, do not do this alone. You can't homeschool efficiently, in my opinion. So I was homeschooled in the 90s, and they always, like, people would see me like, you're a homeschool kid? How come you're not weird? And I'm like, oh, thank you. But we did know the other homeschool kids who were weird. And you knew why they were weird? Their parents were weird. And they never got out of their home. That's why they were weird. And so if you want to have weird kids because you're weird, then you're okay. Don't worry about it. But if you don't want your kids to get the constant, like, why are you so weird? You know, then get a community. That's the easiest way to fix the weird problem. Is because they'll have enough interactions with other people and adults and other things to, like, learn not to be weird. So when they're little, it could be as simple as a group, a play group, you know. As they age, they really need to have more structure. I would highly recommend building a co-op or a commonwealth if you don't already have one in your area. They really become important because, as I talked about earlier, when they develop that amygdala, they have to have peers. You cannot, it's essential part of the development of that, of the self, because you develop yourself by assessing yourself with other people, and if you're all alone, you can't do that. Okay, so my last thing I want to say is, this was 10 days ago, this picture right here. This was the day before. This was the day before, and this is 10 days the day after. So this is where I live. This is the Ohio River. We play on this riverfront all the time. And we cross these bridges. It was just super fun. But it was -5 degrees with the wind chill. And the sun was setting, and we had just got back from the Y. And I was like, guys, the sun's setting. It's right up there. Super cool. Like, we should go up there. And they're like freezing because their hair is wet. It's like 0 degrees. And to get up to this lookout over the river, it's easily 15 flights of stairs. And we had just been swimming for 2 hours and rock climbing. So the kids were like, Mom, really? Like, guys, but the sun's setting. We can get a cool picture. We can do, like, it's super cool up there. And so then, like, my kids were like, okay, let's go. And so we just start running and run up the hills and get up here. This is my nephew, and we take, and this is my niece, and we took this beautiful picture, and the kids were like, that was the coolest thing ever, right? And my sis, and then here, my niece lives about a mile from our house, and we wanted to go pick her up, but I wasn't going to drive in this. Not because I can't drive in the snow, but because they can't drive in the snow. And I wasn't about hit by one of these stupid cars. So I told her, I was like, I will not drive to go pick up her, but we can go walk there. We walked 1.5 miles in a blizzard, and then 1.5 miles back in the blizzard, right? About halfway there, my daughter's like, I thought this would be fun. Now I'm realizing this is not fun. But then she said to me, it's okay, Mom. I've learned to embrace the adventure and not the pain. And I was like, almost started crying in the snow, and she's like, yeah, let's make a song. Embrace the adventure. This is so much fun. We're like, the wind is hitting us. Our eyes are like covered in ice. Like, fingers are frozen. And there's like, and it's like, and each time you step, you fall. And she's like, it's okay, Mom. Embrace the adventure. I'm going to be able to say I walked through the great Kentucky blizzard of 2025. And like, yeah. And then I'm like, this is such a bad idea. Why did I do this? So we did pick up her cousin. We did get back home. We had to stop at Target and get warm. But that's what my embrace the vision and not the pain, because embrace the adventure, because homeschooling is a great adventure. It's one of the best adventures you'll ever go on. It's so fulfilling. There is a lot of pain, it's and a lot of heartache, but it really is a great adventure. So with that, I'm done. Any other questions before we go? Yeah, so this is right here. This is 16personalities.com. You can pay for this and get more information, but I just took I don't pay for anything because I use the library. So I just took the test, and then I went and got the book at the library. So then this one right here, I did pay for this. This is Jordan Peterson's test. It's called Understand Myself, and it's like $10. And if you get it, you can send it to your spouse, and they can take it, and you can compare your compatibility. So it wasn't that much. And he goes through this whole thing. He also has other things on here, but it's very helpful. So those are the two tests that I would recommend. I don't have one for Personality Plus because it's just a book. I can go back there. Yeah, just like Google search this one. Any other questions?
You said that there is different versions of the huge, I don't remember what it's called, what you're putting everything into.
Oh,
AI,
yeah.
There are, like, some people like Grok better, but I like ChatGPT because with Grok you have to be on Twitter, and I think Twitter's garbage. So I just like having a website that's...
You said there was a free version?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You can have... This is free. You won't get access to ChatGPT-4, but I don't think you would need it. Yeah, I think it's still pretty... Yeah. Oh, no, you totally could do everything with this. It's just... It's like the different... It's complicated. You can... It'll work. Yeah. But you can buy it once and then use it and then stop paying for it.
Okay. So
yeah.
As you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, don't buy it. Just get the free one first and then, yeah. Yeah, ChatGPT. The thing I like about it is there... It how do I go back to, like, this thing? Yeah. So there's a lot of different things you can do with it. You can even, like, it will create Word documents for you. You can, like, print off and, like, spelling tests. I've been doing that with my daughter. And it'll, like, it'll actually create the curriculum for you if you, like, tell it what you want it to do. But it also can, like, create images and do other, like, there's a lot of things that it can do. So I like it better than Grok. But some people think Grok is better. You can do some research. So any other questions? Okay, awesome. How do I...